And we are back. Another timely episode of The Durin Show. I know everybody is almost getting sick of how many episodes we're releasing on this ridiculous cadence we've got going. Mitchell, Matt, how are you guys?
Burnt out from all the recording. It's really getting to me.
It's daunting. It is daunting.
You guys have got to give me a break every once in a while. These 6 month hiatuses aren't enough.
Mitchell, how many episodes do we have in the queue? 40, 50? I don't know. The backlog's growing.
But then when you subtract the ones where we forgot to hit record, the backlog gets really small.
There is a good excuse because, you know, people keep like asking, are you guys just busy? I'm like, well, actually, we get online together and talk quite a lot, but end up playing Age of Empires or something else instead of recording.
Yeah, we have some of our greatest moments. And then afterwards, oh, that would have been an interesting topic to record.
Wait, what did we just talk about? Oh, well.
Exactly. Mitchell, you were just reminding us how long it's been since we released an episode. And so if your tally is correct, our last episode was getting prepared for Clash on the Coast, right?
Yes, it was the tease where Matt was going to pick our lists for us.
A big reveal. What list?
Yeah, that was October.
Oh, no. It was a while ago.
It released in September, I believe. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Speaking of which, I do want to try that format again sometime this year. One of the events we're going, it would be fun to pick each other's list. I enjoyed it a lot. I hated the list I took, but I enjoyed it.
You just want revenge. You just want to be able to do it to me.
I'm going to pick easiest list. I'm going to send Matt with, I don't even know, all unnamed orc captains.
I gave you a good list, though. That's the difference.
The most depressing thing, because Matt and I were so happy with Marcus's list. We're like, Marcus is going to do really well. And Marcus had the most miserable time. He goes, this sucks.
No, but he took it to a bunch of practice events, and he's like, this list is killer. I admit, we're
getting ahead of ourselves, so hold on. Let's rewind. The reveal was Matt picked Mitchell's and I's list. We didn't get to the details. So, Mitchell, you go first. What did you end up taking?
Matt pulled a old juke move and had me take Felbeans of Mirkwood Legendary Legion, despite everybody thinking I was taking Dragon Emperor since Matt was picking for me.
Yeah. Felbeans came in hot.
Very sneaky.
Yep. And I'm not going to spoil Mitchell's review, but there are going to be some very spicy bat reps, both for the Masters and for the GT.
Yeah. And the Masters was where I took the Emperor.
Yes. Yep. And I took Boromir of Gondor with the banner and a impressive horde of Gondor troops. A lot of Fountain Court Guard, I think 15 or 16 or 17, a very high number with an Avenger Bolt Tower. That was the spicy add-on that ended up being really fun, honestly. So I was giving them crap about the post-event because I did get to play two or three practice games, and the list played phenomenally for those two or three practice games. And then I got to the tournament, and one game definitely had a boneheaded play that I, in retrospect, definitely shouldn't have done, but ended up being just the most vanilla tournament performance where the list would battle like crazy. I think I explained it to you guys as in it was so hard to feel like I was playing down. Like, it's so easy to get victory points or just feel like a tar pit. But on the flip side, it felt so challenging to score victory points. I really struggled scoring victory points. And so I think, what was it, five games, Mitchell? I think three of mine were minors. Three or four of mine were minors. It was insane.
Yeah, five game stretch. I could see why. You also had some pretty good performances with it, so.
Yeah. The list, I can absolutely see why it's so popular. It's very good. It puts a lot of pressure on your opponent. I just did not play it very well.
I just think it wasn't your play style. I've seen you with LSR. And so, you know, the LSR is just the jack of all trades, right? He kills hard. He has all the might. He's still got the banner effect. And when you swap him out for Boromir, it's not a perfect swap out, right? He's got the banner, he's got the might, but he does not have the easy killing. So
I want to recap just quickly, like, the win loss. I don't think we have the memory or the time to jump into like a detailed bat report, but Mitchell, give us a quick synopsis about how the Masters event went for the league with your Emperor Legion at 700 points, I believe.
Yes, 700.
And then a quick synopsis of the GT with Felbeans at 800 points.
Yeah, so I'll do a quick one. So the format this last year for Masters, it was our first time doing Masters for our league, because the league did pretty good. I think we had over 140 participants in the league, which was awesome. And so we took the top eight players, and we did a single elimination. So it's going to be three rounds. You win, you move on, you lose, you're out. I think that's going to change for next year, but that was the format. So it didn't matter winning big, just mattered if you win. I ended up getting the 3-0 and winning Masters with the Dragon Emperor. Very fortunate. Yep. I had some very close games. The second game, I feel like I lucked into that last win because he flopped at the end. After that, you know, I played very well. Say that again.
Was that your draw?
No, I, we did draw. Yeah, you're right. We drew and I won on tiebreakers. Yeah. I lucked into that one for sure. But I was, you know, lucky enough to get the third win and, take home the Masters title. And then for Felbeans, I think the Felbeans performed amazingly well. I'm such a fan of that list. I ended up going 4-1. My one loss was a boneheaded move where it's the final combat of the game. And I had my Spider Queen in perfect position, won the fight. I was so happy that she won the fight because I needed to get two kills in order to break him. And I was so happy that I won because I barged, got into the two guys, and killed the two guys. I was so happy. And that's when I realized after I did it that I could have barged, rather than just killing two guys, I could have barged and killed two guys plus his banner. And I didn't get his banner. Because I didn't get the banner, I lost.
Two guys including his banner. There's three orcs 1 inch away from you, and you just charged two of the orcs, not realizing that if you would have charged the two on the right instead of the two on the left, one of them would have been the banner.
Yep, and that would have been the win. But I didn't get it. I think I came in fourth at Clash out of 64 players. So still very happy with the showing. I had the most scored VPs. So that's the thing I'm finding with Felbeans. It is very, very easy to score VPs with that army. I think I had 47 VPs scored or something like that in five games. So very happy with that performance.
Nice. Mine will be quick. I'm trying to remember what my score was. I think I went 3-2 overall. And again, I think all of them except one were minors. And so I think I finished in the 30s or 40s overall in ranking for the event. First game, heirlooms. I hate heirlooms. And my opponent with Eastern, he played Amder. It was interesting. But he baited me into deploying everybody in a corner. And the whole story of the game was I just couldn't get out of the corner in time. And he snuck away and was able to go dig up an objective. So I lost 6-5. Nail biter of a game. I was so close to pulling a draw, but I couldn't unwind it. And then had a bunch of nail biter games. I lost to Cause of Doom, I think 7-6 on domination. And yeah, two other minor wins and a major win. I will say the takeaway again, Boromir's great. I struggled to play him consistently well. The Bolt Thrower was the MVP for the tournament by far. That Bolt Thrower did work. No swift reload. It surprised a lot of people. It put a lot of pressure on people. It won a shooting battle with elves single-handedly. it was quite impressive. Did not regret taking that at all. That was eye-opening to me. I definitely want to find a way to include a Bolt Thrower into my Aragorn Gondor variations.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So that was Clash overall. Very frustrating event for me just because I was I felt like I was fighting tooth and nail for everything, but the event itself was a lot of fun. Very well done. Yeah. Again, huge showing year two. I think the attendance is getting boosted again next year. Matt was not able to join us because of last minute life events, but you were able to join us, Matt, for March on the Music City in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. I do love that tournament. That's the second time we've gone. I just love that tournament.
It's very well done. You got to give us a quick description of the event, and then we got to start talking about how we did on that one.
So that's the Nashville groups. They have two big tournaments every year, and so that's one of the two big ones. I think that's their bigger of the two, though. So remind me, how many players were there? 33?
I think 32.
32 players? I think 32. Yeah, it's a two-day, five-game GT. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was 900 points?
900 points, very unique points level.
Really unique points level, and I thought it was great. Yeah, so I took Last Alliance, finally starting to use those consistently, so that was fun.
Your midnight purple, midnight color variation, that looks really cool.
Yeah, well, I think it looks cool. A lot of people are like, oh, you're playing Age of Sigmar. No, it's Middle-earth.
No, it's great.
Mitchell, what did you take to the March of the Music City?
So my motivation for the army that I took was, number one, I really wanted to play it. But number two, I needed the motivation to finish painting it. Because I believe when we decided we were going to March on Music City, I knew I was getting close to the 200 models painted in 2023. I was at 140 or something like that. And so I was like, if I paint this army, I'll be getting real close to the 200 mark. So I did paint it. It was Iron Hills. And I wanted to go pure because I wanted to paint as much of the army as possible. By the time I had finished what I painted to get ready for the event, I was at 186 models. I didn't get to my 200 models painted in a year. But I was very close, and I was still happy with 186. But I took Dayan on the Pig. I took Murn and Drar. Which I actually really liked. And then I took the Ballista.
Nice. That's a lot of models painted in a single year. I think I got up to nine or 10. Most of that was contrast.
New record.
Yeah, it's a new lap record. I took Cause of Doom. I have never regretted taking Cause of Doom. It is a fun win, lose, or draw. It has some interesting games for sure. It was Durin with a bunch of Hearthguard, a King's Champion, a Dwarf King. I did include a few Iron Guard, I think four or five Iron Guard, but it was all Hearthguard, Khazad Guard, and Iron Guard in that list. Just a tank force. So we got to quit. This was the closest we've ever come to the Hammonds taking first, second, and third. One of us, I won't say who, screwed up and cost us the first, second, or third placing. So you got to give, Mitch, we'll start with you. What was your win-loss, and what was your final placing?
I was 3-2, and I don't remember my final placing. It dropped way, way off after I got spanked in the last game.
You went 3-2? I thought you won.
No,
I was the one that screwed us up. I thought I got fourth. Okay, so maybe
I screwed it up.
When you messed it up, it forced Mitchell and I to play each other last round on top table is what happened.
Oh, that's okay.
Yes.
Since we were all set, if we all won our final game, we all would have podiumed.
Yes, and I'm still hesitant because I don't know how Matt and I got paired up in the final round, but somehow we did. And so, yeah. And we know the results of that one now.
This one was the one where major victory was win by more than five victory points,
yes.
Right?
So,
which I liked. I liked that.
Love the format.
Loved it. Yep.
Kept everybody engaged, but it was scrappy in the middle. It was very scrappy in the middle with all the minor wins, minor losses. So, Matt, you ran the tables 5-0 Last Alliance, right?
Or 4-1. No, I had a 1-2 loss. Right. So that was my only loss. I lost one victory point to two. We each had a banner, and he got a point for wounding my leader in the scenario. But it was like I was dominating that scenario and just ran out of time. So it was a loss. But anyways,
So 4-1 with the first place finish.
Yeah. And I had like a pretty good VP set up. I think I won by 2 tournament points, but all the tiebreakers, when you look on it, I had like, I can't remember. It was like almost 20 more victory points than the next.
You were definitely the clear winner in that tournament.
Yeah. I think every single game you scored at least 10 victory points, except for your loss where you lost 2-1. You had some major points you put up with that army. Alendil.
I'm not going to give a bunch of battle reports because the only battle report is elves and Numenoreans like, and Alendil, hold my beer, boys. You just stand back. I should have lost so badly because like I was playing against dwarves and I was out of position. I was just getting mangled and Alendil just, I still don't know, but like he killed an entire Champions of Erebor army, just destroyed everybody. And it was amazing. Yeah.
Alendil's fun.
He's great.
Unless you're facing against him.
I don't need skill. I just need Alendil.
I just need Alendil to charge. No, you played well. I went 3.
I didn't tell everybody what I took, though. I was Alendil, bunch of Numenoreans with spear and shield, Glorfindel, and Círdan. And I maxed out my bow limit with the elves and had 2 Rivendell knights. And that was the list. So
my favorite was the title that Matt sent to us. It's the F. Ingmar list.
Yeah. David, sorry. I don't care what happens, but if Ingmar sees me,
I am ready.
Gotcha.
I was fortunate. Did anybody play the Ingmar list except me? Mitchell, you played it, right?
Mitchell played Ingmar twice.
Oh. I played 2 Gullivars.
I was for the first time in my life just praying to play Ingmar, and you guys got 3 games against Ingmar, and I didn't get them. It's like,
I played Ingmar round 1 on Assassination. Oh, I didn't tell people. My 4th hero, we had this big debate, what should be my 4th hero? And long story short, I opted to take the Shield Bear. Because I was like, I'll see how a free hero combat with Hearthguard pairs. Maybe that sounds interesting, right? If I can keep everybody together. Well, the first round, I draw Assassination against Ingmar, and I've got the Witch King on Fell Beast. I've got Gullivar, 3 Barrowlights, and they're all looking at the Shield Bear. So that whole game was just, can I keep my Shield Bear from getting assassinated? Quite funny. Ended up being a draw, I think 6-6 draw on Assassination. I lost. I had a minor loss against Arnor because I forgot to protect my home objective on breakthrough. I let a guy sneak through, and I blamed at the end of the game. I was like, man, I lost because I forgot to plug a gap in the terrain piece. And Mitchell's like, well, why didn't you just have a dwarf sitting on your home objective? Very fair call out. That would have been good. But that was funny because, again, my army, 900 points? I was in the low 40s, give or take, 40-something models. I played 70, 77 Arnor troops with Malbeth, who gives the 5-plus fury save. And I quartered him so quickly. The doors, it felt like every door swing was going through 2 Arnor guys, even with the fury save. He couldn't stand. It was funny. Yeah, choppa. But lost that one. And then I had 3 pretty big wins. Did I finish 4th?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think I was 4th.
Yes.
I think so. I think I dropped like 8th or something like that.
So the way it's set up is you had that loss. You finished 4th. Mitchell and I played each other top table. And whoever won that one, as long as we didn't tie... I mean, there was the only outcome that could have screwed us was a tie. So whoever played Mitchell and I. And it was my birthday weekend. I'm still convinced that Mitchell, like, threw the game, but he swears he didn't. But I wanted that my first time beating a brother in a tournament happened on my birthday, but oh well.
He didn't second guess it. He's like, I win.
I'll take it.
Got it.
Happy birthday to me.
No, there was a thought process.
I don't want to start a bunch of conspiracy theories. I don't think you
really... Nope. There's no conspiracy. I'll explain completely what was going through my head. I knew that the only thing that would screw us both is if we drove. So I knew no matter what, one of us was going to win and win big. So I went YOLO and I said, either I'm going to pull this major playoff and it's going to work and I'm going to crush Matt, or it's going to backfire and Matt will crush me. And it ended up backfiring. The YOLO did not work.
And the only thing that was different in that game is not just the Numenorean warriors and the elves went, ah, I went, ah, and Elendil had to say to all three of us, hold on.
Cause it almost worked.
Yeah. I cannot believe how quickly you modes, like you broke me. That's the only time I was broken that entire tournament. And it was like second turn I was broken. Oh, and the first shot out the gate, I had to spread my army out and I couldn't cover everything. So I put Glorfindel outside of Círdan's bubble with plenty of warriors to scatter, and the ballista direct hit Glorfindel.
Overall, though, a super fun event. I definitely want to try and find a way to make it back at some point in the future. Our second time going, yeah, but nothing bad to say about it. Our last quick recap is really recent. Mitchell, you and I went to a event in Langley, BC, what, 2 weeks ago? A week ago?
Yes, two weeks ago from this last weekend.
Yeah, give us the details of that one, Mitch.
So that one, we were, I was going to go. I didn't know what I was going to take. Marcus' schedule frees up. He's like, I'm going to go too. What are we going to take? And we have had this idea for 2024. We are going to represent Durin. That was because we are at the Durin show. We need to represent Durin. I was super excited. I took Durin to one tournament last year. I was 3-0, took first place in Portland. I was excited to break him out again. Marcus took him to March on Music City. So we're like, we're both going to take Durin and we're going to crush these Into the West podcasters that keep bashing on the guy. And that was crush, mentality.
Crush is a big word. I think if our talking game translated to performance, it'd be great. But so far our performance hasn't caught up with our trash talking.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair. But anyways, that was the idea. We have big ideas.
Yeah.
So it was 650 points. I took it the same list I took back in last July to the 650 event. It's Durin, King's Champion, a Dwarf Captain with Shield, and I took 12 Hearthguard, I think 5 Iron Guard, and 6 Dwarf Warriors with Shield. It's like 28 models. It's and it hits very, very hard.
Yeah. How did you finish overall? What was your record?
So I was actually the only undefeated person. I went 4-0. It was a 4-game tournament. However, I screwed up in the last game. I took a minor win. So I think I had 2 or 3 minor wins in the event. So because of that, even though I was undefeated, I got leapfrogged. So I took 2nd place.
Nice. Still a solid showing for Durin.
Oh, yeah. It was a great showing for Durin. I had so much fun. Durin and Hearthguard just go chop. It was so much fun. And what about you? How'd you do?
Also had a pretty good event. 4 games in 1 day. I went 3-1. I had a major loss. And I don't remember what my wins were. I can't remember.
A lot of majors.
Yeah. The dwarves played really well. Again, it's kind of a mindless, you just march up and as long as you don't protect yourself from getting swarmed. The double banners. I felt it in March on the Music City. The power of the double banners with the dwarfs, and I felt it again with this 650 point. Again, I was Durin, King's Champ, a King, and all Khazad Guard and Hearthguard. That was the only unit type. So much fun. My loss was on domination to it was like an army of 37 or 39. I can't remember the count. I think it was 37. 37 elves. And I couldn't do anything on the numbers. They just, he outplayed me. He won the objectives. I think I lost that one 7-3. So I took a major on that one. But ended up being
what's your finish?
3rd place. So we got 2nd and 3rd overall.
Not a bad chance. Durin, there was 2 Durins out of, I think he had 16 people there or 18 people there. I can't remember. But Durin took, there was 2 of them and they took 2 podium spots. It was great.
Except the End of the West guy, Ian, took 1st place. So
I know. Yeah. We don't need to mention that part.
Even with our trash talking.
Yeah, I know.
It was looking great until Mitchell took the minor win on the last round.
Yeah, I know.
How Mitchell was going to say.
I know. Many regrets after that, because I thought, oh, I won. I'm the only undefeated person. That means, because most of the time that means you get first. And then all of a sudden the scores come out. You're like, oh, all the things that I could have done to secure that, I should have done.
Missed it by that much.
Yes, but it was still fun. I still had a great time. And it will definitely not be the last time I bring out Durin this year.
Yeah, so much fun.
I just remember thinking Marcus must be on like suicide watch because Mitchell was giving all the updates and I kept texting the group chat. I'm like, Marcus, how are you doing? And we didn't hear a thing. And then so I'm like making up my own thing. I'm like, ooh, Marcus must be losing a lot. And he's not.
I think I left my phone in the car. Yeah. No, it was a really fun event. Great time. And again, all of the things that could have gone horribly for the Dwarves, at least for me, it was a pretty good day. I got hot on all of my games. I feel like I got hot early, which when you even the playing field or even the model count playing field early with Cause of Doom, it's normally going to be very favorable for you. So, okay. I want to do two more things before we wrap up this, episode, just so we don't spam our listeners with too much content, you know, all in the same year. The year is young, guys. One, I want to do a quick preview of what's coming up. We have so many events coming up in the next few months. And then I want to talk about interesting scenario faux pas or blunders that we've made in the last couple of events that we've been to. I've definitely made a few really big blunders. At the end of the game, you're left wondering, why on earth did I do that? And so it would be fun to kind of recap some of those and hopefully not repeat them going into the future. Give us a preview of what's on the horizon from a event perspective.
So I think next on the docket we have Adepticon coming up, and then there's the Philly tournament in February. So I guess that's the next one, February Philly tournament, and we've got Adepticon, and then right after Adepticon we've got the GT in Texas, the Aggieland one. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the Portland GT. So there's like four really big tournaments in the next month and a half.
I think the smallest event is going to be either Philly or Portland, and they're both expecting over 30 players, like 30 to 40 players. So these are going to be some pretty nicely sized events.
Yeah, and like the Aggieland one, there's a potential ticket to Articon Masters on the line for that if they get the 54 people they're expecting. So
that'll be a blast. Yeah, that has a ticket to the U.S. Masters, which I think is something that they're starting to plan and roll out publicly, a 2025 U.S. Masters or North America Masters, not just U.S. North America Masters event, Articon Masters event. Plus, yeah, just a 50 plus person tournament. There's only a couple of those in the U.S. Mm-hmm. U.S. and Canada.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
So the Philly and Adepticon are both 750. What are the point levels for Portland and Texas?
700 points for Texas.
Okay.
700 points for Portland.
Oh, nice. Okay. I have an idea. Are we telling people what we are bringing? I really want to take Bears Bjornings for the 700.
Very strong at 700.
I feel like it's cooling off a little bit. Not everybody is taking Bears. There's not like seven Bear player every tournament you go to. It's cooling off a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, no. There was just a recent tournament recap, and there was a lot of Bears there. Can't remember which one that was. I saw it on Facebook. I'm all Last Alliance.
Last Alliance, 750 and 700. Nice. Mm-hmm. Mitchell, what are you taking?
So, I'm still deciding. I really want to take Durin. I also think Iron Hills with the Ballista does very, very well. And then I did a stupid thing, and I started a new army last week for a doubles tournament that I did locally. And now all of a sudden, I'm really looking at that. I'm like, oh, Fiefdoms looks really, really cool. So, I experienced the Clansmen finally, Marcus. I know you've been talking about them, but those Clansmen are just so much fun. You just run in with a Scottish accent, and you're like,
"Ah,
Fleetham, Fleetham!" So much fun.
nobody respects it. And all of a sudden you've got four clansmen on you. You're like, oh, I better not lose this fight.
Broadswords.
No, fiefdoms are fun. All right. So you're thinking dwarves or fiefdoms maybe for the 700.
Yeah. I'll probably do one for each, I bet. Just because it's fun. I think a Durin would be very, very fun. That's probably top of my list right now.
Got it. I don't want to get into it now, but I have a really weird serpent horde idea that I'm trying. So I'm for sure taking it to Philly, and then that'll give me a little bit of feedback if it's crazy or if there's potential there. So right now I think it's going to be serpent horde for the 750s.
Nice.
We shall see.
Pat would be proud of you.
I know. Hey, he's inspired me. Although it's depressing, as I'm painting my troops, I look at him like, okay, that's pretty good. And then I asked Pat Bertoli, I was like, oh, can I see your all cavalry army? I need some inspiration for the how you did color variations on your cavalry, just so I don't have like the same color on every horse. And he sends me, and it looks like a bunch of...
straight out of the books.
Oh, no, better than the books. Like, what's the... What's the stallions from I'm blanking out. Yeah, it just they're gorgeous. And so I gotta temper my expectations because I'm dealing with what contrast can give me. That's that's my mindset right now. So okay, for our topic, I wanna dive into what have you done in scenarios that ended up being a faux pas. Some specific examples. Matt was saying how he might not be able to participate because he hasn't made a mistake in years. So this might just be a conversation between Mitchell and I.
No, I will go first. This happened at the last tournament I played. I went to a no-named hero tournament, which was very fun. And I realized how much I do this. And I... we'll see an opportunity of high risk, high reward, and I take it every time. And you put your perfect record on the line of a dice roll. And so I usually don't do that on a 50-50, but if I can think it's slightly better than 50-50, I take it, and it always bites me. And it's just not smart, because you play the game out, and odds are going to be way better than whatever that all... So here's the scenario I'm talking about. I have two elven heroes mounted with lances on the charge against a cave drake, isolated before the rest of the army gets to me. Now, cave drake doesn't have strike. My captains don't have strike. We're both 5-6. I've got an elven blade, so win the duel. I've got way more dice. And okay, what happens? I get a 6. Cave drake gets a 5, mites it up to a 6. I lose the roll off. Both of my name captains toast. Or my captain's toast. And the game at that point is effectively over. And I wound up losing it and, you know, wound up getting second place at the tournament instead of first. And it's like, why do I always, I see it and I'm like, oh, if I kill this cave drake, I'm mopping up. And it's true. The game would have been over had I won the roll off. But you can't tempt dice. Just be smart. Do the strategic thing. I always tempt the dice. I have so many stories like that. And it just, you just don't let dice control your destiny.
That's
especially when the downside is so big. Because I believe the reason why your captains died is because the cave drake charged.
The cave drake initiated the first charge against a warrior, and the captains charged in after that. So they were on the charge. But yeah, the cave drake was having the what do they call it? Monstrous charge.
Yeah. Oof. So I love that play. If he doesn't charge, if he does charge, the downside is yeah.
Exactly. Whereas you let the cave drake kill one warrior and you set up for positioning, and I could have easily outpositioned him and played the long game and killed all of his warriors, kind of ignored the cave drake, being smart instead of just trying to go all in on it.
Yep.
Good call. Yeah. I like that, watching out for the monstrous charge. That's a good, because I was going to say, well, what is your, if you said 50-50, you avoid that, but 66-33, you'll jump on that. So you're saying you would still take it if the cave drake hadn't charged.
Yeah, because the downside, how many is he going to kill? He's not going to kill two captains and a third of your army.
Yeah, that would be insanely hard.
We hinted at my boneheaded mistake, but I still go back to it because the loss at Clash was to the guy who took first place, Andrew. It was a very, very fun game. One of the best games I've had in a long time. And it came down. He's a very good player. Very fun. And he saw it too. And of course, he's not going to say anything because I don't blame him. I wouldn't say anything either. But when he saw me barge the Spider Queen and just to two orcs instead of an orc plus his orc with a banner, even he was going, because all I could see in my head.
Everybody at the table saw it. Everybody was like,
And it's funny because, like, when you get down to the moment, you realize this is the last play. This is it. This is all or nothing. They call time. This is it. And you know this is the last combat. If I'm going to win this game, it's going to be now. Or if I'm going to call it close, it's going to be now. And I just got so into my head. And, you know, I was thinking of what could go wrong. And all I could think of, I'm going to roll a one on my barge. I'm going to roll a one on my barge. So I was moving the orcs when I barged them in the direction to guarantee, even if I roll a one, I could still charge two. Because I needed to kill two. That was my whole goal. I needed to kill two. And I did that. But now knowing that I rolled, I think, a three or a four on my barge, I could have easily have gotten an orc plus the banner. And that would have been for the win rather than the minor loss. And if I had been thinking big picture, the win would have been a better upside than a minor loss.
Yeah, I think the banner was like 2 inches away from you. The other thing, so that last turn, because you had quite the audience watching the last turn, there were 7 or 8 critical combats. And so it wasn't like this was the last. It was the only fight that mattered. There were a lot of fights that had to go your way to make sure that you could get to a position where you were breaking. And you saved your Spider Queen for the last one.
Yes. You're right, because that's what stressed me out so much. I was also banking on a couple of my giant spiders, and all of my giant spiders lost and their fights.
Razgoosh had to kill two, and Razgoosh pulled off a clutch, winning the combat and killing two orcs with 3 dice.
Yes, yes, it was very, very clutch. So there was a lot of cool moves, a lot of clutch moments.
Yeah.
But that was my boneheadedness of just, you know, just getting too much in a rush. If I just slowed down. You know, there's nothing wrong. We've already called last turn. It's not going to hurt to really think what's the best move here. And, oh, there's a banner right there. I also need to get that too.
Yep.
That was it.
Interesting. Okay. I have several, but I'm going to start with this one. Deployment on Maelstrom scenarios. I had 3 back-to-back Maelstrom debacles at one at Articon on table 3 that I should have won, but because of deployment, it put me at a huge disadvantage. Then I went to Nova and I had again another Maelstrom deployment debacle that absolutely cost me the game. And then at Clash, I had a massive deployment debacle on heirlooms that I paid for dearly with a loss. And all three of them. Well, so 2 of the 3, so at Nova and Clash, the situation was my opponent deployed first, so I could see what I was getting into. And I made the investment to say, I am going to deploy and try and jump on a warband that's by itself, or I'm going to try and capitalize on a warband that's by itself and get a quick elimination, a quick kill. Not totally by itself, but like by itself enough where one turn without support, it was going to be in trouble. But to do so, I deployed myself on the outside perimeter of the board. And what happened in both games is I ended up getting stuck there and I couldn't get to the objectives. I couldn't get to the prize, whatever it was. I think actually both of them were heirlooms. I couldn't even get to a place where I was picking up objectives and lost the game. And I lost the game sitting on that outer perimeter edge. So in retrospect, I've got to slow down and not go for the gamble, that quick assassination gamble, if it results in me getting boxed out of the board, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The debacle, the Articon mess up is I decided not to spend might to deploy my whole armor together. And I think that's just again, in hindsight, I think that's a critical fundamental mistake. Like, if I'm deploying and I'm going to try and jump, I'm going to spend all of my might to make sure my whole army comes to bear, because it's got to be a quick hit with everything or it's not going to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a takeaway on Maelstrom deployment.
I thought of another mistake that I made, and I've been actually making it a lot more lately, where I've realized I have this play, and I'll give you an example. You saw this, Marcus, when I was playing my final game of the Masters, and I thought I could get a trap on Gullivar and knock him out.
Yep.
And about a couple moves in to position it, I realized I couldn't get the trap. And rather than aborting and playing the safe game, I still went with it. And it didn't cost me the game, but it did cost me VPs. So that was a mistake and a risk I didn't need to make. So something I've been noticing I'm doing lately is when I realize my initial plan or my initial play that I thought could work isn't working, and I still go through with it, I need to abort and back off.
Well, not only did it not work for you, you gave him an option. You gave him a chance to get back into the game.
Yeah.
If you would have just done nothing, it was a game over.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I basically fed him my Dragon Emperor when I didn't need to.
Leader VP?
Yep, it was leader VPs. It didn't cost me the game. I still had pretty good control of the board, but it was one of those things where, like, I did not need to risk that, because if a couple of other things went his way, we're talking a different game with something I didn't even need to risk.
Yeah. I have one. So when you face let's go back to the BC event we went to with Durin. I lost to an army of elves, so I think I was 28 models. He brought 37 elves, and it was domination. It was a very wide open board. And I sat there at the beginning of the game for 10, 15 seconds, and I thought, well, this is going to be hard. I'm just going to charge. And I didn't put any thought into what is the best way to actually put myself in a position to win. And what I mean by that is I charged in. I calculated, like, hey, I could sit way back and make him deploy up front, but it's still going to take me two turns to charge to get to him. And he has the potential to back up and keep shooting. So I'm going to deploy up on the very front as far as I can and just rush at him, march at him. He's going to get two turns of shooting, and I'm going to engage. And that's as far as, like, strategy went for me. I charged forward with 28 models minus three that I actually sent back for objectives behind me. So that was dumb. I should have deployed objectives a lot more forward, and I should have taken, I think, my whole army going for the break and then the late scatter to objectives late game. Because what happened, so I charged with 25, two of those were banners. He shot six Khazad-Guard, he shot six Hearthguard down before I got into combat. So that means I charged in with 19 dwarves, 17 fighting dwarves, into an army of 37 elves. And he just, I held up well. He had no banner, and so I kind of abused his low defense with all the wood elves he had. But because he just had so many models, it was a tar pit. I never had a chance to disengage and then go scatter and try for the objectives late game.
Yeah, that's an interesting pickup. Although I still agree with your plan of keeping a couple got dwarves back. It's a lot easier for dwarves to fight on an objective than to dwarves trying to huff it to an objective when time's a factor. So I still agree with that play. But
I think my frustration was there was zero thought into that went into a really tough matchup, except for I'm just going to charge forward and hope I break him quickly. That's not a viable strategy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it can work out, but I think the outcome of a 7-3 loss was not surprising. And I wish I would have spent another 30 seconds or another couple minutes, or even, like, while he was going through his move phases, reanalyzing, hey, is this really the best decision? I could have aborted the strategy of holding those three doors back. I could have brought them forward. They would have still had an opportunity to affect the game, because he was rushing elves past me to go for objectives. So I think there was 1,000 things I could have done, but I put zero thought into strategy after turn one.
This would be a great one to go through, because I'm trying to think, if you plant yourself on three objectives, even if he breaks you and he takes two objectives, is that still a loss or is that a win? Breaking without broken and domination, it's just one VP, right? So he gets five VPs.
So in domination, it's just one victory point for breaking, one victory point for wounding leader, 10 victory points for objectives.
So if you just completely plop your entire army on three objectives and say, shoot me to death, that's fine. You're not going to wound Durin. You might break me, but I'm going to take these three objectives and you will take two and I will win 6-5. I don't know. Is that possible?
Does domination end on rolling the dice or quarter?
I think quarter.
It's quarter, right? So I quartered him.
Yeah, I think it's quarter.
I'm checking.
It is.
Yeah, it is quarter. So I like your thought process, Mitchell. I've lost that matchup in different similar situations, but a different army matchup. I've lost it where they got me down to where I was close to quarter, and then they just shielded. They outnumbered me 2-1. They had might for moves and marches, and they stopped the game from ending. And I could do nothing about it because I only had, you know, 1/3 of my army left.
Oh, yeah. And I'm thinking, like, okay, so you're saying you're worried you get close to quartering before time to end up if he was just shooting at you.
Yeah. And in this specific matchup, I know anecdotes don't count. He did kill 6 of my 28 dwarves in 2 turns of shooting.
Right.
So 4 turns, 5 turns, 6 turns of shooting, especially if we're not doing anything, those are really fast turns. He's going to put on of shots. That's 6 turns of
shooting. Yeah, no, that's fair. Yep.
I like that if the game were to suddenly end on a 1 or 2, I like that strategy. Because you put a lot of risk into the equation, and he's praying on a 2/3 chance that the game doesn't end while he's out of position. Quartering, I think it's a little bit tougher.
Fair enough.
But that is more strategic thought that you just put into my game than I put into my game, and I played it for 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
What else? What else have you guys run into? Because I've got more.
Being too quick to get into a strike off.
Ooh. Mm.
Do you realize everybody loves heroic strike? How underneath, I mean, heroic strike is an unneeded stat in most games if you play correctly.
Yes. 100% agree with that.
Big if. That's assuming you play correct. It's me you're talking to.
Yeah, how many times, though, if you think back, and I'll just say for myself, have I gotten into a situation where you need to strike? And again, it comes back to tempting dice. That's all heroic strike off is.
Oh, yeah.
It is a great thing if you are going up against someone who's out of might or doesn't have strike. That's a great move. But if you're going into another hero with might and has strike, avoid that whenever possible. Unless it's no points on the line for you and points on the line for them.
Yeah, I faced on the doubles. I faced a Belrog, so it was 350 points per side, and so it was just a Belrog solo drop, and then the rest of the army deployed Maelstrom around it. It was that one double scenario. I can't remember. So I swarmed it, ran in with Imrahil, struck up, rolled the one, and I was like, well, now I'm gonna basically go into the same thing of where I just hope the Belrog doesn't roll a 6. And he didn't. So it's like I wasted a point of might for nothing because Belrog didn't roll a 6 anyway. So it's like,
Yeah.
So in December, I always blank on the name of the blog. Is it Tell Me a Tale?
Yes.
Yeah.
The guy reminded me about the blog post he had that was one of our very first episodes. And he called out the fact that counter-striking was a horrible use of might. And we talked for like 1 hour about that. And
I now agree with him.
Seriously. 2 years later, I am 100% aligned with his philosophy and your philosophy, Matt. Do whatever you can to avoid striking. And even if you do get it to that one-on-one, you know, combat against somebody else, my mentality is right now, unless you are guaranteed to die, i.e. trapped, cavalry, or monstrous charge, with 30 dice coming back at you with wounding bonuses, don't strike. Tank a turn. Think about heroic defense, or just think about saving your might. Because if they don't kill you, the next turn gets really awkward for them.
And two things. So, want to clarify, we're talking about strike-offs. There is a great use for heroic strike when you know it can't be countered. So, that's that. Counter-strikes was what we're talking about. And what really taught me this was playing Dunland last year. Because having that Goroff Ironskin, who gets his free heroic defense, you never want to burn his might for strike. And you realize how many times, oh, crap, I lost the fight, and the guy didn't wound me. Okay, that's great. And Goroff just wears people down. And then, by the way, when they don't roll the six, he piercing struck with his free heroic defense. So he's strength six back at you. They are doing anything they can to might that up to a six. They're scared to death of it. So, yeah, it's... And then by the end of the game, you've got way more might than they do. And it just makes you really think of how to play the game if you're not just worried about your fight stat line the entire time. So
absolutely. I'm a big fan of this, especially now that I'm playing Durin. Because, yes, he can tank. He can tank it. But I don't want to – I want to make it – he's virtually impossible to die with D9 and his Fury save. But he can, and he can take wounds. If you heroic defense instead of heroic striking to counter, you basically make it impossible. Because usually it's sixes by sixes five. Naturally. Yeah. And I love that way more than just the off chance of you win the strike off and you're doing wounds back to them. I'd rather put the pressure, like Matt said. They have all the pressure in the world to roll the six. You do not. They have all the pressure in the world to roll on their, you know, to wound. You do not. It's just better.
I will also say, kind of strangely, I do that with Elendil a lot. And it's like, they'll strike. I'm like, okay. Now, if they've got a wounding bonus, I never let them just win it. And I usually don't put Elendil in if they can strike up with a wounding bonus, like a plus one to wound. But if they need sixes to wound Elendil, yeah, use your might up.
Do it.
I'll call a combat on it, because if I win, you're dead.
I'm not saying this is original. Definitely stealing the blog post content here. I started thinking about the strike off as not an investment of one might, but it's an investment of three might. Because you strike off, you're likely not gonna be able to one punch it. Then it's a heroic move to go first the next one, because you've got to either re-engage to try and chase your kill, or try and heroic move to get away from your kill. And you always lose that roll off, and then you're right back into strike off. So in two turns, you've burned three might.
Yep. So it just takes us a few years to admit we're wrong.
That is a very good point. I think it's three years ago that blog post came out, and now we're all parroting it like it's our novel idea.
Well, you started by mistakes we've made. So
yes, that's true.
That's a good point.
It is a good one. And you're clearly mastering that point, Matt, because you've had some very good tournament showings the last two or three or four tournaments.
Yes.
All podiums, not first.
I've gotten lucky. I think I won three last year. Moments played tournament this year.
I actually think we're all doing very well on the podiums. It's fun because we've been talking all these theories, but I think we all I would like to see how many podiums we've had in the last year, because I think all three of us, we do have a lot.
Yeah, it's all for naught for me, because the two tournaments I went to last year that I really wanted to do well was Articon and Nova, and I think they're my worst showing since I started playing the game.
Did we talk about Matt playing next to the board where the Balrog was running away from the players?
I remember it.
Down on table 48.
I had such a bad showing at Nova. I was down on – I wasn't bottom table, but I was like away, and I was like watching, and there's a Balrog actively running away from a Bjorning bear. And he's like, I can't fight that bear. The bear's scary. I'm like, no offense, but like, what is happening right now?
You are the Balrog. You are the definition of scary.
The Balrog runs from nothing. That's how bad I played at Nova. I was down having that experience. So I clearly have nothing to talk about on the show.
Funny. Okay, a couple more examples of scenario faux pas. I definitely have. at least one. Freaking hold ground. And I bugs me because Mitchell called me out for it. And it's not the first time this has happened. It's just the first time it cost me. Hold ground, I think two or three times, not leaving a freaking dude back on my home objective to protect. It's an easy investment. It's one model.
Breakthrough.
Or sorry, yes, breakthrough. The one where it's four objectives and you're trying, yeah, you get points for protecting, points for attacking the one in the back. So breakthrough. Not leaving a model back to protect your objective on breakthrough. I don't know. And it's, again, Mitchell, you said going slow. So you could apply that same principle to reading the scenarios and prepping to put your models down. Not just rushing to set up the game and get started so you're maximizing your clock time. But taking another couple seconds and even a couple seconds while your opponent is going through their move phase. You've got time. Glance at the scenario and make sure you're not doing something boneheaded, like intentionally choosing to not protect four victory points. That's four victory points. Yeah. It's such a huge change. Like if you make one mistake and somebody sneaks through, yeah, that's worse than getting your leader sniped in any scenario.
And that was the whole basis of why I've developed that philosophy now on breakthrough. I will always leave someone through, because no matter what, you know, you could have just the weirdest turn ever where all your cavalry die or something stupid on the flank happens. And all of a sudden there's a guy running free towards your back line. And just having that one guy costs you the four VPs, right? But if you put one of your own guys on the back objectives, now not only do they get there, it's a 0-0 nil, you know, it's nothing happens, but they have to kill your guy. And it just makes it a lot. It gives you a lot of leeway.
And likely that one turn where they get to your guy and then try to initiate it to combat, you're going to have guys running, right? So I've always lost by one turn. And that one guy prevents that surprise. Oh, I'm going to get there and just take it. I'm going to get there. I'm going to try and charge. I'll be able to dodge. And then the cavalry will show up the next turn and I'll win it back.
Exactly. It always happens the turn when the turn that they get to the objective, the game ends.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's another very good point.
Yep.
Tempting dice. All right. Any other very obvious, I'm taking all these learnings because with all these tournaments coming up, I don't want to repeat these same mistakes. Any other obvious tournament faux pas? Mitchell, there's one for you. I'm going to say it unless you say it.
Uh-oh. I don't know it. I did have one with the dwarves of just
charging the
just
bows. Going post.
The what?
So in Vancouver, I lost to Robert, and he beat me soundly, and he shot me to pieces. And then I was so proud of Mitchell because the next round, Mitchell faces Robert with the 37 elves and the 14 elf bows. And it was a banner. I don't remember which scenario it was. It was one of the ones with the banner. And Mitchell finally pulled the, hey, I have a banner, you don't. I'm going to hide behind these two buildings, and you're not going to be able to just sit back and shoot me at the back of the board. And he made the elf player charge at him the whole game, and he was safely defended behind barriers. And then what'd you do, Mitchell?
I came out a little bit just to poke the waters, just to see what happens.
What happened?
I almost lost. But what happened if you saw the...
Mitchell poked so Durin got
Durin got surrounded and almost died like a chump, but he didn't. I was laughing because I'm like, okay, I just got to keep these banners alive. And if I keep them together, they have higher defense, all this other stuff. And so as soon as I came out and poked and everything went absolutely against me and Durin and my King's Champion got surrounded, I was like, retreat. I pulled the banners back. I started running back with everybody, left Durin and the King's Champion to their fate. And somehow they survived at the end of the game. I still don't know how they did. They should have died. But yes, my whole game on that one was I was going to win with the banners. And yeah.
Tuna and Durin. Wait, so which scenario was that? That was destroy the supplies, right?
Yes, that is correct.
So there was a very realistic chance he could have gotten a 2-2 draw. Because don't you get 2 points for killing the leader?
I think so, yes. And it almost happened.
You really letting Durin get swarmed. I didn't realize he got stuck. I thought he retreated.
No, he got stuck in. I tried to bail him out with the King's Champion and my Hearthguard, but yeah, I was like, my goodness, this is what happens when you tempt fate, when you go out and poke.
Don't
and, poke the bear. Yes. So, yes, I did win 2-1, but yes, that was way closer than it needed to be. I was also going to point at the fact that I, on the last game, we talked about how I didn't get the major against the Angmar. It was the classic game where Angmar, he had his Orc battle line. He's got the Barrow White. He's got the Witch King. He's got Gullivar. And so I played Gullivar quite a bit. So I'm ready for all the anti-Gullivar stuff and shenanigans that he's trying to pull. And he squared up his Orc battle line in front of my Dwarf battle line. And he moved first, and he stopped 2 inches from my Dwarf battle line. And allowed me to charge his entire Orc army with no Gullivar support, with no Witch King, and with no Barrow White. Just straight up charge my army into him. And I was like, as soon as I did that, and I think I killed 15 orcs in the first turn or something like that, I started coasting. And it was the classic game of Khazad Dûm when suddenly you quarter him before you can get to the Witch King and Gullivar and kill it. And so the game ended because I quartered him too fast without getting to the Witch King.
It was Clash by Moonlight, and so you really needed to get leader kills. And didn't Gullivar get a flash leader kill?
Gullivar got a flash. He killed my King's Champion and a banner, I think. I needed one more turn to kill the Witch King and his Barrow White, and I quartered him. I had quartered him.
Yep.
It was just, classic. Oh, I should have been paying attention a little bit more to how fast I'm killing him. I started coasting, and it cost me the first place.
But now, since we've talked about it, we won't make these errors ever again. We'll play flawless tournament scenario management, and we'll be golden.
Absolutely.
Right, boys?
Guys?
I have one last one that I make almost every game when I'm playing with high point heroes. Which I usually don't do, but playing Last Alliance is kind of new for me. So as you're approaching an army, I'm usually getting shot at and protecting heroes. So you get your heroes behind a battle line. Mm-hmm. But knowing the right time to separate the battle line to get your heroes through, I have gotten boxed out so many times where the lines clash, and I'll spend 2 rounds of combat before I can really get a Lindel or Glorfindel into the play. Because you're worried about them getting shot out, and then the opponent clashes, and you have to either go around terrain or wait for a turn where you move, win the move off to be able to back out.
I know exactly what you mean.
Which is a rookie mistake, but it's one I make.
I make that a lot myself. And I don't know if you're interested, but may I offer you what I have finally done, because I keep forgetting to correct myself anytime I have that hero.
What is this, advice on the Durin Show podcast? Yes, I'm interested.
I will now
start. I thought you said we didn't have a podcast anymore.
No, the podcast is dead, just like the game.
It's as we have as many episodes. We have more episodes in 2023 than Middle Earth had releases.
Barely. No, so what I started doing on my deployment from turn one, so I don't forget and mess myself up, if I have a mounted hero, I will leave two minimum, or likely three if I have a big enough battle line, gaps in my battle line for a horse to run through. And so it costs you a little bit of infantry deployment, but you never have your hero boxed out. And it is also a great counter against feeling like you need the heroic move.
Yeah.
And it is also, yes, the not needing to heroic move, but it is also actually a great bait, because they often think there is gaps in your formation. I will flood this gap and I will crush, I'll split your army in half, and all of a sudden they're getting countercharged by your big hero. So I feel like I've done this quite a lot with my Fell Beings of Mirkwood, because I have lots of spiders, the cavalry size base, my Spider Queen, a Razgoosh popping out of nowhere, it's a great bait, I found.
Now, there's an important nuance, because good players will have a battle line, and then at the last minute, they fan out to the strategic formation. because I have messed up either the sequencing or how far I move, I'm doing that from turn one. So it's not even a surprise, but it at least eliminates the time of you getting caught on your heels. So you lose a little bit of surprise, but with Elendil, it seems like it would be effective because you don't really care if you your warriors get off, because the more hero combats Elendil has, I feel like it's a win-win for you, right?
Yes, yes.
You know who I do that most with, surprisingly? I do that the most with Durin. Boxing Durin out behind. I don't want him to get shot, and I get him stuck behind a hero. Or I get him stuck behind a warrior wall, and the warriors in front of him, of course, never die. The warriors away from him die quickly, but the warriors in front of him never die.
Which, dear listener, you are listening to that and you're thinking, who in the world worries about Durin getting shot? It's impossible to wound Durin with shooting. Watch Marcus's games. Durin by in the way, where they weren't even aiming at Durin.
Ask Marcus about his game with Alisher of Durin versus Durin and how he lost that game.
I think that was an 8-7 loss on top table. That was March in the Music City. That was the first time we went. Great. Again, great event. Super fun. And he shot. My line was three deep. Maybe it was just two deep. He was shooting an Iron Guard behind Durin with a Dwarf Ranger and wounded Durin. And that was the victory point he had on me to win 8-7. I will never not be salty about that.
You did remind me of another mistake I've been making. And it's especially with Durin. I fall for the hero combat trap with Durin. I think that I could easily get 2-3 kills or 3-4 kills, depending on how you set it up, if I just called combats and I end up burning my might too fast for combats that fail. I have had a bad streak, even with Imrahil. He's got +1 to wound, charging on a horse, and I still flop combat. So I need to resist the temptation of calling combats when they're absolutely not needed or have high reward. When it's just killing troops, resist the temptation. Don't call the combats.
Yeah. So I think, Mitchell, this was the last one I had on my list, and I agree with you 100%. With dwarves, ban yourself from ever calling a hero combat, no matter what happens, no matter how it looks. Just say, yep, I will not call hero combat. I am using that with Serpent Horde. It is paying huge dividends. Huge dividends.
Yeah.
And the one time so far in my practice games with this new idea, the loss I have, it was in Contest of Champions, and the game came down to Suladin, the Golden King, and 4 Harad warriors charging a single Rohan warrior who did not charge me. So he's rolling 1 dice with no banner. I have 3, 4, that's 7, that's 11. 11 dice plus a banner and 2 points of might. And I lost the combat. I lost the dual roll. You tempt fate. And I had waited and I had set up my last big play was based on a heroic combat. Just don't put yourself in that situation. Yep. Don't put yourself in that situation.
I agree.
So basically all of our takeaways are don't spend might. Don't spend might and slow down.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all the observation. I know I probably have a bunch more. What could I have done better, or what did I do poorly in a scenario? But that's all I put together before we jumped on the call.
Well, that's good, though. We should probably make that a reoccurring segment. What mistakes have we made in the last month?
Yeah. Well, that's a good, maybe this is a good segue to our outro. So you guys got to explain our tournament tracker idea. And maybe on the tournament tracker idea, we tag on what were the big no-nos from the event we just played.
So one thing we're all going to commit to doing this year is for all of the tournaments we attend is creating a spreadsheet where we track game performance and tournament standing so we can all combine and figure out our record for the year. And I think we just realized we need to add a segment to that, tournament takeaways.
Yeah,
that'll be cool. So we'll be sharing that data. And, you know, we usually do share a quick recap, but we never can look back and be like, my win-loss ratio for the year was.
And the one that Mitchell was trying to calculate unofficially was his victory points and victory point differential, his average victory points per game and victory point differential per tournament with his fell beans, because that started to be a really interesting stat. Okay, so tournament tracker is going to be, I think you said this, but it's by brother, by army, so we can see good, evil, what faction, tournament takeaways. And we got to give a shout out to Richard, because we're Richard Lynn. We're stealing his idea. It's a very, he's been doing this for a while, and he shared his most recent data. It's like, oh, that's a great idea. So shout out to Richard for being studious and keeping beautiful graphs of his performance. Okay, why don't we wrap it up here? Good episode back. We promise at least to get another episode in before 2028. We'll see when we release it. You know, gotta keep everybody wanting more, right?
We are successful.
Yeah, and hopefully some very good showings, and we'll have, regardless of the ultimate performance, I think we'll have a lot of fun recapping and rehashing the events we have between now and April. All right, with that, cheers, everybody. Have a good night.
Peace.
Bye.